This episode of Hookup Horror Stories is brought to you by Foria Wellness. At Foria Wellness, pleasure is your nature. Foria Wellness is passionate about innovation in the sexual wellness realm. They offer tons of products made from plant-based ingredients specifically designed to enhance your sexual pleasure. From increased arousal and pleasure to aiding sexual and menstrual comfort, Foria's large selection of wellness products solve real challenges and deliver meaningful results. They are also innovative leaders, having invented the first ever cannabis and hemp-based personal lubricants and CBD suppositories, which help address menstrual and pelvic discomfort. I absolutely love the CBD booty melts to help aid in comfort during spicy times with my partner. They also help with keeping things nice and lubricated. Try Foria Wellness products and get 20% off your entire order using code DEMITRI at checkout. That's code DEMITRI, D-E-M-I-T-R-I, for 20% off your entire order. Thank you, Foria Wellness, for sponsoring this week's episode. Welcome to Hookup Horror Stories. This podcast may not be suitable for listeners under the age of 18 and may contain themes of sexuality, sexual assault, domestic violence, or other mental health issues. A content warning is in place. Viewer discretion is advised.
You know, we make fun of it almost in a joking way. Oh, like when guys cry or someone cries after sex, but sex does bring up a lot of emotions that you might not be ready for. It's a very vulnerable space and it's very highly, like, people can be self-criticizing on themselves. Like, am I good enough? Is my performance good enough? And especially with males, I think. So if they don't perform or they don't last or whatever the case may be, they're very hard on themselves.
Welcome to Hookup Horror Stories, the podcast where we spill the tea on sex and dating. I'm Demi Wilde, your resident sexual deviant. And today I've got a very extra special guest deviant. I have kinky wellness coach and founder of The Partition, home of kinky wellness, Dana Shergill. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I do apologize to my listeners if there is a little background noise. I do have some lovely construction going on right behind my head. So I do apologize if there is some background noise. But there is, alas, nothing we can do about that.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. Dana, I'm very excited to get to talk to you today because we're going to talk about BDSM, which is something that I think a lot of people might have some misconceptions about or maybe not have full information about. It's kind of like your specialty. So I think this is going to be a really great conversation.
Yes. Well, I think that when it comes to BDSM and kink, a lot of people, for some reason, think that they're not in it. But then when I start describing maybe the softer sides of it, like hair pulling or eye coverings, all of a sudden people are like, wait, I actually do those things already currently. And I'm like, yeah, that's the softer form of BDSM, because there's always this connotation where it's very aggressive and it's very dark and it's very heavy and it's always about pain. So my aim is what I do as a kinky wellness instructor and coach is to bring the softer sides and remind people that our sex should be something that we're encouraged to use our imagination, use it for cathartic spaces. And this is really a form to get to know yourself.
Definitely. Yeah. It also is a way for people to kind of explore their boundaries, explore what turns them on, and also just explore other people in perhaps more compromising positions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How did you get involved in this?
Well, actually, I would say that it actually starts when I was, it goes back. So when I was being raised, I was raised as a really rough and tumbly kid. I was raised with a brother and I had male cousins and I always played super aggressively. And the older that I got, though, the avenues to play rough were not acceptable for a young lady as they were when I was a small child. So I was held to a different standard, but just because I wasn't allowed to play rough anymore doesn't mean that I didn't want to play rough, right? So actually I saw a video, pornography, I was introduced to it right in high school. And I didn't really understand what I was watching, but what I was looking at was people playing rough and they were sweaty and they had bruises and they were exhausted. And I was like, this intrigues me. And I wanted to talk about it, but I wasn't really in a position to bring it up at home. My friends certainly weren't interested in it the way that I was. So for a number of years, pornography was a teacher for BDSM and kink. But when I was in my early 20s, that's when I was actually introduced to BDSM and kink and really brought into the lifestyle. And that's where I really learned that I knew nothing about BDSM and kink, because pornography is not something that you should resource as a tool. And by going through that and going into the journey, I realized that playing rough is something that a lot of people like to do, but unless you're in organized sports, there's not a lot of avenues to go into it. So then when I got a little older, I went back to school to start a kinky wellness retreat because I wanted to kind of showcase the other forms of sexual education that we haven't been given, which is the mental, emotional, and spiritual aspects of it. And, you know, imagination, all that jazz. And my business plan for a kinky wellness place won first place. And that's really when I noticed that people are open to this. They want to talk about sex. They want to learn about it, but there's not a lot of approachable resources for it. And a lot of people are scared to bring it up first. So I just went head first into this field. And I've been talking about sex ever since and just really pushing that people should encourage themselves to use their imagination during sex and find a sex education that suits them. Because the sex education that we're given, it's not copy and paste. You cannot copy and paste sex ed, but when we forget that, I think sometimes we forget that. And again, sex ed is not something that you can learn in a semester of high school or a college or university or just a small specific timeline. It's something that continues all the way up until you're in the grave. So it's something you really need to keep your eyes on and keep it up to date, like your dentist and your eye doctor and everything else that follows suit.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, you talk about imagination in that, and I can definitely see how imagination can really kick things off sexually. Can you talk a little bit more about like what parts of imagination are kind of important in BDSM?
Well, absolutely. So imagination itself is a crucial element to our self-development, because if we don't, there's two things that can happen with your imagination. One, if you don't have it in check, it often runs wild on you. And we can think of the negative things that are going to happen to us. You know, terrible things are going to happen to me. Life sucks. All of these negative imaginations. But on the flip side of that, if you don't have your imagination even dormant or it's not even there, you're going to feel like you're stuck because you're unable to creative problem solve. So in life throws you a number of problems that if you just had a little bit of imagination, you'd be able to problem solve your way out of it. So with sex, you're able to, like any skill, practice it, build it up, encourage it, get it stronger and stronger and stronger. And it's funny how much people are, they don't realize how much their imagination is unchecked. And it's something that you kind of do have to bring in a little bit. You do have to control it. So in BDSM and kink, you give it an arena, you give it an area where it can run wild. You can give it a theme. You can give it a kink. You can give it a whatever you want to do. You have a place to play with it, because over time, imagination is something that we tend to chip away at, I guess. It gets replaced with work, school. We don't have other resources. And so when we're younger, imagination is all over the place. You can have a cardboard box and it's a castle, but we should be really practicing doing that even into our adulthood.
Definitely. I also think that sex itself is a form of play. So like you're kind of reiterating this thought of myself where, you know, sex can be playful. It can be fun. It's not like a chore, you know. It's supposed to be the avenue where you can like kind of unleash that childhood freedom in and allow yourself space in order to explore those avenues of yourself.
Absolutely. And it's as much as there's a lot of sexual healing involved in BDSM and kink, it's also for your exploratory part as well. So there's a balance of both. Sometimes, you know, we can focus a little bit too much, especially with BDSM and kink. There tends to be like, oh, it's healing. It can be healing. It is very, very healing, but I don't want to minimize the avenue of this is also exploring, playing, imaginative. It can be on both sides, depending on how you view it and how you're working with it in that moment.
Mm-hmm, definitely. What are some common misconceptions, do you think, that people have about kink and BDSM?
I think the biggest one is that it's always painful, that it's always someone's getting hurt, but not in a good way. And BDSM and kink is something about giving people this element of, life is going to throw you pain. Life is going to throw you problems. Life is going to throw you things where you have to be disciplined enough to get through it. And you can practice all that through BDSM and kink, but people are scared of it. You know, you say BDSM and kink and some people, they tense up. A lot of people tense up. And I don't believe that that's their fault, because how we've been structured with sex is it has to be a specific way. You can't get too creative with it. You can't be too eager about it. You can't really view it or voice your opinion of, oh, I like sex. And that's why I named it Kinky Wellness instead, because Kinky Wellness is basically BDSM and kink and alternative sexual wellness practices without giving it that title, because I don't want people to shy away from it or immediately be like, oh, BDSM. They don't really even know what the word means, and they just know they don't like to hear it. So that's definitely a big one, is that it's scary and only damaged people go into it. People that, you know, those people, like those specific people, whatever they put under that category, but really it's for everyone. This is a space where everyone can come in. A lot of people, like I said, are partaking in it already and not really understanding that that is the softer form of BDSM. And so it is highlighting that BDSM can be soft. It can be playful. It can be caring. It can be caressing. It can be sensual. These are other avenues of BDSM and kink that don't get highlighted.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think people have a stigma placed on BDSM itself, where, like you said, either they've only seen the 50 Shades of Grey, they've only seen, you know, stuff in porn. So like, people already have a preconceived notion of what it is, when in reality, it's freedom, it's exploration, it's play, it's fun. It's supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be painful. Well, some of it can be, but
yeah. But even that, so even with your expression, like what you said there, freedom of expression is something that we need to put in. So sexual energy is creative energy, and you can't bottle it up. So if you can get it out through painting, acting, all sorts of the arts, but sex is also an art. And we sometimes cut that away from the art piece. Like, we don't really connect it, but it can very much be part of the arts.
In what way?
Because it is creative expression. Okay. You can cathartic, you can build a scene around it. It's kind of like a play. So for instance, if you get into a kink scene and you add props, you put on an outfit, you stage it a little bit. These are all things that you can do even through theater, except at the end, someone, and hopefully everyone involved, is getting an orgasm at the end.
My kind of play.
Yeah.
Let's go to the theater. What are like the three basics of BDSM? You know, you talked about aggression, imagination, and attention. What avenues can people kind of reinforce these themes?
So when it comes to aggression, imagination, and attention, I like to say, like, when it comes to aggression, it is a natural human emotion that we all have. We need aggression, and we need a healthy balance of it. So for instance, you don't want aggression to go out of hand. You don't want it to explode on someone where it's not supposed to. But if you have no aggression, that means you're unable to stand up for yourself. That means you're unable to stand up for your boundaries in the first place, because you need to reference this momentum of like, no, like, I'm here to protect myself. Cause that's what aggression does. It stands up for you when you feel that your boundaries are being pushed or when you're being attacked in some way. Aggression comes out to protect you. You just have to find that healthy balance of it. So we don't have a lot of avenues to work with aggression. A lot of people think it's a very negative thing. They hear aggression, they think anger, or you must be violent. And that's not always the case, because you can be aggressive in BDSM and kink with no physical contact at all. You can be aggressive through your word choices. You can be aggressive through actions. For instance, you can like rip apart someone's shirt off someone if you wanted to. That's a physical representation of aggression. But to not have any aggression at all, that's also unhealthy. So like all things in life, it's finding the balance. And we talked a bit about imagination helps you be more creative, but imagination also helps you connect to the other versions of yourself. So we always have, you know, multiple faces. We have this version of us that we put on when we go outside, but then there's other versions of us, and our imagination is able to connect those dots and give it a space to be in. You can pretend per se to be that person and, you know, cathartically get that out of you. And then with attention, the type of attention that we receive has the power to make us, build us up, or destroy us. And this is not just in childhood. This is in adulthood as well, the type of people we surround ourselves with. So being able to ask for specific attention on a need-to-need basis, that is healing. That can be healing. Hey, I need this type of attention. Maybe I want more love, or I need more healing, more caressing. Like, this is what I want. Or, hey, I want to get out some energy. I want to roughhouse with you. I want to run around. I want to, like, you know, play rough. Can we do this? And you can ask for that in your sexual healing and sexual life as well.
Definitely. I feel like a lot of people's problems in the world are not enough attention, and the people on the internet seem to like just need so much attention these days, and I don't think they're getting it at home. This might be a great way for them to get that attention without having to put other people in their line of sight, you know?
Well, attention is one of those things, like it's not even, you could be getting a ton of attention, but if it's not the right type of attention. So a lot of people, if you're in a, maybe you get a lot of negative attention. Someone's always constantly putting you down. Someone's always criticizing you. You have a boss that's hovering over your shoulder all the time. You're walking on eggshells. Like, it doesn't always, family is a big one, but our work settings as well is a very big one. Maybe you have a job where people constantly yell at you all the time because it's maybe not, other people don't like what you do. So those type of things, you need to find an element to balance that out, because it will start to deteriorate on your self-confidence, your self-worth, and you need to put yourself in a position where you're getting positive attention or whatever attention that you currently need in that moment.
Definitely. Can you talk a little bit about the spiritual side of BDSM? Like, what does that mean?
Yes. So for me, when a lot of it, when it comes down to BDSM and kink, the first person that you need to be honest with is yourself. Do you actually like this? Do you not like this? Because as much as we can find things that we do like in our sex life, when you start adventuring into BDSM and kink, you're probably not going to like all of it. There's going to be some things that you're like, no, this isn't for me. And so when you start connecting the dots and start being more honest with yourself, that is a spiritual moment, because that's when you're able to play within the good of yourself, you know, the quote negative bad of yourself, and you start weaving those together. And what you end up getting is this feeling that you're more whole, more complete. You have more self-acceptance. When you reach that level of self-acceptance, that is a spiritual moment.
Wow. I feel like I need to practice this myself. Definitely. Cause like, I always feel like, you know, perhaps there's, I feel like I'm like perpetually vanilla, but at the same time, I'm like, I don't want to be that all the time. I feel like I need to explore a little bit more myself. I've done a little bit of exploring in BDSM. I'm kind of part of the leather community. I've been a part of like that type of thing, but like I as far as like, you know, getting tied up, for example, I haven't had that opportunity. I haven't like had the full submission. I haven't had like, you know, full dom situations, you know. I kind of consider myself a switch, you know. I can do both, but yeah, like I think that self-empowerment and like self-growth and like understanding where your boundaries lie is definitely like part of this.
Yeah. And also to your point, so when I first got into this, for a good number of years, I would say that I was just a submissive. Like, I really didn't do dom stuff. It wasn't something I wanted to do. I'm fairly structured in my day-to-day. I wake up, I everything is pre-planned, I guess you would say. So when it comes to my sex life, that was the area where I could just submit, not think of it. Someone else is going to take care of me, a trusting person. Like, they're not going to push me too hard, but they're going to, you know, I'm going to just follow their lead. And that gives me a lot of mental space where I can just kind of let go. But by going through this journey, I've also realized that do trying the dom and partaking in it and playing it, that is something also that I needed to do, because you can learn different skills from each one. So in dominance, you're able to lead. You can better your leadership skills, control as well. So say you have a job where you have no control, you have to follow the lead of your boss that maybe you don't like. Again, we can use that as an example. So in your sex life, you can change it around. You can have that leadership. You can have that control, because being powerful, whatever way you feel that way, we do need an outlet to feel powerful, because the alternative is to feel powerless. And that's when we feel self-defeated, and we don't want that. And if you stay in that self-defeated mindset for too long, you almost forget the feeling of what power can feel like. And that can be really dangerous, because you don't want to self-pity yourself. And we do need opportunities to feel powerful, for sure.
Yeah, I completely agree. How common do you think it is that people who are perhaps leaders in their work or their life, that they kind of explore BDSM from the more submissive side, whereas people who are more submissive in life want to be more in power in their sex life?
Oh, I think it's incredibly common. Most of the people I work with seem to follow that. You know, there's a lot of switches that I work with as well, but I would say that it suits it. So if you are in a position of power, you can't be on, I guess you could say, you can't be on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all the time. You're gonna end up burning out. And sometimes it is fun, and it is fun to let go, let loose, lose your mind. Like, just be with the motion of what's going on. It gives you a mental break and a mental clarity of being like, oh, it's almost like a recharge. Because, like, when I go into it and I can just let go, it recharges me. So the next day I'm like, okay, I can do this again. I can do this again, and vice versa. So yeah, it's very, very common.
Yeah, I think so too. How so? Obviously, consent is like a huge part of BDSM. It's probably the most important part. What side of consent is rarely talked about in BDSM?
Yes. So consent definitely is something that is, if you're not partaking consentingly and ethically, you're not partaking in BDSM and kink ethically or even right. Like, it has to come with it, of course. But a side of consent that we don't talk about that much is owning your consent. So a lot of the times, for instance, I can use an example. If you weren't clear enough on what you were consenting to, and say you consented to impact play, which is where somebody comes in and hits you with something, right? If you didn't say with what tool or how much or how you were going to end it or what their pain level is to your pain level, and you didn't discuss this, then you might run into a situation where you feel that your boundaries were crossed or your limits were crossed, but it might be just come back to poor communication, poor clarity on it. So you have to take responsibility for that. And that kind of, you know, the more deeper you go into it, you start to learn that more. Because when it comes to this, one of the risks and things that I want to point out is, regardless if you're in BDSM or kink or anything, sometimes in sex, you will be triggered. Something will come up. Our body is a minefield of repressed memories and repressed pain. So you might end up in a situation where you do get triggered, and it can feel like a panic attack. And so sometimes you can get triggered by not having clear boundaries laying out. And you have to own that. You have to own that you weren't clear enough on the consent that you were given, because human beings are not mind readers. We can't put this pressure of like, oh, they'll know. Someone can come in and be like, I'm a dom. I'm a dom. I'm a dom. But they don't know you. These are all titles that we throw around to each other. So they might think that this is a right way, or they might think that you're okay with this, but you might not be. And to tell you the truth, when it comes to triggers and, you know, repressed pain and mind things, we might have forgotten. So we might not even know that that's going to trigger us. We don't know until it happens. So that's something to really take consideration, is just being mindful of the consent that you do. You know, obviously, if someone's pushing your boundaries, obvious somebody's putting pressure on you, that's wrong. That's not right. But if it was just miscommunication, don't be so quick to be like, it's their fault. It's not my fault. It's their fault. You can't do that. You have to look at it from a very logical standpoint.
Definitely. How do you navigate those moments when you actually are like in a moment where you're in a scene with somebody and they have a triggering moment and they like have a freak out? How do you navigate that moment?
Absolutely. So the three basics of BDSM and kink that that everyone should know is your partnership, impact, and plan and prep. So during your partnership, we have our interview, aftercare, and negotiate. So aftercare is what happens after the scene has ended, and these are practices, things that you want to help you feel better. So certain words, certain activities, certain actions that you can do. So these would help in your tr if you're being triggered. You execute your aftercare. You stop. Don't work through a trigger. If you're going through something and something's very, very emotional, you have to stop. You have to stop. And then you can, you know, deep compress our vagus nerve. You can put an ice cube on your chest if you want to calm yourself down with temperature. You can do box breathing, count in, like, you breathe in 4 times, hold 4 times, release 4 times, and just repeat. So these are practices that you can do, but really making sure that you're aware of each other's aftercare should something like this come up.
Yeah, is aftercare. I mean, I've talked about this a few times before, but for people that might not know, what's a refresher course of what aftercare is?
Yes. So aftercare is a series of language, behaviors, or attitudes that would happen after, like we said, your sex is done, or if a trigger were to go on. And in my opinion, there's two types. So you can have aftercare routine for the bedroom, which is more soft, cozy blankets, communicating, telling each other you did great. That's a big one. So after a scene, you thank each other. You talk about how that scene made you feel. You talk about maybe what didn't work, what you could work on in the future. If you're in the middle of something that you're exploring boundaries and say something was good, then you say, I kind of want to explore that more. If you were exploring boundaries and it didn't go very well, then you can say, no, I don't really want to try that next time. And then you have your bathroom aftercare. So these are for people that really like to jump in the shower right away. They want to have a bath right away. They want to, you know, clean themselves off. And so I like to say that you should have an aftercare kit for both. So if you have something like a bath bomb or your favorite shower gel or something like that, you just leave that there. And then for your bedroom, fuzzy socks is a big one. Cold feet can irritate a lot of people. So you want to rebalance, but it's also the space where partners come together and rebalance the relationship dynamic to where it was before the sex actually started. So this is to make sure that there's no power imbalance when you leave, because that can make people feel, that can bring up some drops in the end. Like you might feel like, why did I do this? So you really need to have that space for reassurance. And so people can come back and be like, good job. Yeah.
Awesome. If someone were to be interested in BDSM, where is a good place for them to start?
Yes, I think when you're first starting out, oh, I feel like sensory play is always a good one. This is like the most simple. You can play with your five senses. So if you have eye coverings, you can play with hot and cold. So with ice cubes, for instance, temperature play seems to be a big one. But when you're using temperature play, the candles that you use, you have to make sure that they're the right ones, and obviously don't put them too close to your skin. So you don't want anything with artificial coloring. That's a big one. So, but these are all things that you can find at your local adult store. Novelty shops are very easy to find, but you can work with different types of textures. So feathers, for instance. And if you do want to go into light impact play, like light smacking and things like this, you know, you can get a paddle, which are very, they're small, they're easy to travel with, they're compact, and they're pretty fairly cheap depending on where you get them. But if you take a look around your house, basically anything with a flat back could be considered a paddle. So as long as there's no jagged edges on them, as long as there's nothing to cut or it's not easily breakable. So use your own discretion when you do use something from home, but it doesn't have to be super expensive. I know a lot of things in sex are crazy expensive. You walk in, they're hundreds of dollars. You don't have to go to that length if you don't want to right off the bat. That's where your imagination comes in. So if you get a ruler and you play into that whole teacher student role and things like that, or education purposes, then you can play with that. You can work your way into it, and you can also use clothes to your advantage to set the scene as well.
Definitely. Okay. This has been awesome. Let's move into the next section of the show. So this is a section that I kind of just started with my new season. So basically people send me emails, and this one's actually taken off of Reddit, but if you have an email, if you have a question, if you have a hookup horror story, or if you have just an advice that you would like, I can read it on the show, send it to hookuphorrorstoriespodcast@gmail.com. But there is a post on Reddit that I think you might find interesting. So it is called Kink Ruined My Sex Life Entirely. Thank you, Reddit. So this one says, my husband and I have been together for 8 years. He worships me, loves every inch of me. He is also a cuck. I have been very careful with this as I wasn't 100% sure he was really okay with me being with another man. He was practically begging me. I didn't see it as a very odd, as he thinks other kinks and fetishes I will participate in. Me on a personal level, really just wanted to feel special by him. Sex was fine. I was happy. Sex has been difficult for me to feel free or included or desired, but I was happy to get turned on by him until he brought up sex with other men and eating their cum for me. Wonderful. Which in the heat of the moment sounds okay to me. So I ventured out with my people and pleasing self and had sex with some tall man who my husband agreed on for me. The sex was boring. The man himself was fine to look at, but as I got closer to him, any attraction I had was gone. He smelled like alcohol and cigarettes. I recently quit. He didn't feel clean, which was a turn off. I let him come in me twice and went home to my husband and cleaned and went home and my husband cleaned me up. So were they not together at this time? I let him come in me twice and went home and my husband cleaned me up, but I will never forget his face when I got to him. The need and desire and how turned on he was. I won't ever feel that way. I don't think. I feel used, feel like pig brought to slaughter.
Great analogy there, I guess. I have lost my ability to see myself as anything but an object for men to use for themselves. I never want to be touched again, ever. The idea sickens me. I miss the old boring sex we had where almost I felt like I was allowed to be a part of instead of an object. I feel dirty. I won't forgive myself for allowing this. I don't think I'll ever desire sex again. I only wanted to feel special, like someone's precious wife. I won't ever feel that way now. I am so broken. What went wrong here, do you think?
This is boundaries, her boundaries. She originally didn't want to do it. She didn't feel safe. She didn't like it, I feel, is a big one. She's used the term people pleasing several times. And this is also something that is a little bit of a concern that we also need to watch, because as much as we want to please our partners and things like that, the relationship with ourselves always comes first. Mm. And it's how we treat ourselves that needs to come first. So if it comes down to, you're allowed to say no, you're allowed to say, I don't want this. Like, regardless, in the, you walk in, you realize you smell that, you smell the cigarettes, you smell it, you get a bad feeling in your gut, you can turn around and you can go home and you can explain to your husband, this is something that I tried it for you, but it didn't work. Can we talk about this a little bit more on other ways that we can bridge our wants and desires together? But you can't just disregard what you want. You can't do that at all. Like, that's not something that's healthy. And it's, you are going to feel bad about yourself after the fact, of course, but she does need to forgive herself. This is not something that you can hold on forever. Forgiveness is a big deal. We have to forgive ourselves. There's all things that we've done that we aren't proud of. And forgiving ourselves is the number one thing. But again, maintaining those boundaries with yourself first is a big, 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 big one.
Yeah, I agree too. Yeah, I feel like she didn't kind of do the negotiation part of this. I think she was just like, I want to do this for my husband, which is fine. That's wonderful. But again, the relationship that you have with yourself is the first and foremost. You know, you don't want to just do everything for everyone else. You know, was it, you know, if you go to a place and the guy smells bad, if you don't feel comfortable, if, you know, he re-triggers this, you know, you quit cigarettes, re-triggers the cigarette thing for you. Mm-hmm. And you don't feel clean because of it. Like, that can be traumatizing. That can be definitely like gross feeling, I should say.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like, well, she says like people pleasing. So she can identify that it's there, that she does things for other people against her best judgment. And that's something that as soon as you can identify, you can start to work on it, which is a positive.
Yeah. Where do you think that this person should go from here?
I think that she needs, first of all, to talk to herself. And I think she needs to figure out what she wants first, because if she doesn't know what she wants or what she's able to, then she's not going to be, she might fall into a trap of going to her husband and then doing things again of what he wants. But she really needs to be clear. And I think she needs to be a little bit more honest that she's not comfortable doing these type of things, whether it's to her or to her husband, but to give that permission to yourself that she doesn't just have to do something because someone says so.
I agree. Awesome. I hope this helps. Again, if you guys have a question, if you have a hookup horror story you'd like to share, or if you have some advice you'd like to have my future guests on, send that to hookuphorrorstoriespodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, Dana. That was awesome. Now, next section, I would like to invite my guests to share their hookup horror story with the listeners.
Yes. So I, overall, I feel like I've been pretty good. I feel like sometimes maybe I was the horror side on me, but no, I feel like I did have one instance where I went over to a gentleman's house and we had sex, and you know, it was like maybe 2 seconds and he immediately came and he just burst into tears. Like, I mean, burst into tears. And I actually got startled because I was just so shocked from it. And I just was like, what's happening? What's happening? And he's just started going off about his ex-girlfriend. And I guess his personal life was all falling apart around him. And I spent the next hour just consoling him. And it was so, I was so worried when I left. I was like, are you sure? Are you sure it's okay? I called him the next day just to make sure he was okay. But it was one of those things that I don't, you know, we make fun of it almost in a joking way. Oh, like when guys cry or someone cries after sex, but sex does bring up a lot of emotions that you might not be ready for. It's a very vulnerable space, and it's very highly, like, people can be self-criticizing on themselves. Like, am I good enough? Is my performance good enough? And especially with males, I think. So if they don't perform or they don't last or whatever the case may be, they're very hard on themselves, very hard on themselves. And I feel like that was a situation here, but also there is, it shows that a lot of people, you know, we run into this situation, the fastest way to get over someone is under someone else. I don't think that's the case. I think what ends up happening is some people, you just bury that trauma underneath another issue and you just keep stockpiling it. And eventually you're going to have to dig back down and fix the original problem of what happened. So that, as much as I did learn a lot from it and I was very compassionate and you know, I never saw him again. He just, and it was like, it's okay. I think he didn't want to see me again after the fact too. He was like, no, this is so embarrassing. But it was something that is startling. And that's the thing about it too. In sex, you might think that, you know, somebody might go well, it might do something, but yeah, trigger, whatever the case may be, things get startled and you have to be ready. You know, sometimes it might not work out the way that you think it is, but don't be dismissive. Don't be that dick or just get up and leave. Like, we're all human beings here. And sometimes in that moment of vulnerability, you just need someone to listen to you.
Yeah, it certainly is a measure of a person, I think, when you're faced with a situation like that. I've been faced with a situation like this similar to where I think someone's expectations were like just really at a heightened scent. And, you know, this is a person that I, you know, went to high school with. We ended up like hooking up later. And so I think he had a crush on me, like even back then. So he was just really like, I want to be, you know, I want to be like the best, you know, for you and blah, 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 this and that. So it was a very, one of those situations where I think the expectation was just so high that he just became really hard on himself and like turned the sword inward. And I think a lot of guys do that. Where do you think that people, you know, I think it is a measure of a person when you are faced with those situations, though, to see how compassionate you are, see like what emotional response can you give to a person? How much can you give of yourself in order to console the other person?
Yeah, it comes down to being able to hold space for other people. And that's something that I don't believe that we're taught a lot, is to hold space for other people. A lot of people are listening, waiting till they can speak next. They don't really care. They just want to answer. Like, they're just thinking about themselves. So with BDSM and kink too, it can actually help you be able to hold space for other people, listen to other people, hear their vulnerabilities, hear what's going on, and work with them instead of just immediately putting your input into it. And vice versa, you want other people to hold space for you. This is a give and take, but holding space for people is very important. And that's how you get that connection. That's how you get that depth, that, you know, someone hears me, sees me. And when you have someone that hears you, sees you, you gain this sense of like, you're being validated, which is very important. We all need moments of validity, which is important.
Definitely. Amazing. Thank you for sharing that. I really, really appreciate it. Last but not least here, Dana, I have one last thing I want to do with you, and I would like to play a game. It is called Red Flags. Basically, I'm going to give you a situation. You're going to tell me if it's a red flag for you or not. Sound good?
Good.
Okay.
I'm a little nervous, actually.
None of these are that crazy. They're actually mostly silly. So just be aware. Don't be scared. Okay, let's find some good ones here, because I literally didn't plan any of these. These are just all ones I've had before, but they're a lot of fun. So number one, they have a split tongue.
Oh, I think that could be a positive. You don't know what, I've never been felt up for that. You know what? That sounds exciting, depending on how they use it, but that is cool. I'm envisioning it now, and that seems pretty hot. Yeah.
Me too. I did see a porn one time with a guy with a split tongue. I was like, why is this so hot?
But to get to that point, I could never actually get a split tongue, but yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was wild. I was very interested in this. Number two, let's find another good one. They keep a pair of women's shoes in their car just in case.
They keep women's shoes in their car?
Just in case.
No, for so many reasons that could be a no for me. I'm not into clutter. Like, I'm just like, get that out. I need space.
Me
I just
too.
Need space. Like, don't people have clutter or just in case? I have it just in case. I used to be like that. Oh, maybe I'll use it just in case. No. If you're not gonna use it, don't.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I mean, I've told this story before, but like, my mom is a little bit of a hoarder. So like, when I like come and help out her and like move stuff out and like get rid of like the stuff that's been in the storage forever, I'm like, please get rid of this stuff. You don't need it. Mm-hmm. Emotional attachments don't help you.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, like keeping a pair of women's shoes in the car for whatever the case may be. I don't know.
That's strange.
That's a very strange one. So yeah, red flag. Number three, they're constantly talking about Harry Styles.
Yeah, it's a red flag for me. I don't know. I am celebrity ideology, like people who idol these people. I don't know. I've met a couple of people that I used to really like, and then you meet them in person and the hype's not there. And I'm like, ah, that's right. We're all human. I got it. Yeah.
And Harry Styles though, like he looks just gross. Like, no.
I actually, you know what? Before I take that back, I feel like if somebody put Hugh Jackman in front of me, I'd be like, yes. You just want to talk about Hugh Jackman? I could talk about Hugh Jackman all day and tomorrow, actually.
Okay, yeah, I can see that for sure. What was that, number three? That was number four. They sleep on a blow-up mattress.
Circumstantial. Like, did you get kicked out of your house or something? You lose a job. But if it's something like you've just been sleeping on an air mattress and you ain't doing anything about it, and this is just your, like, frat boy living lifestyle, then no, that's a red flag.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And last but not least, they don't have a safe word.
Ooh, red flag. And that safe words, I feel like, actually I was having a really good conversation about this. I want people to remember that even though you have a safe word, which means stop all things, that doesn't mean that all the other words don't exist. You can still use other words and communicate. I think people get so wrapped up in safe words. You can still use other sentences and things like that. But yes, you obviously need a safe word. That's a must.
You can also just say stop.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's the other thing too. So when you're into like kinks and things, like stop doesn't always mean stop. And sometimes you're into role plays, right? That where you can't speak, maybe you can't hear properly. And so with safe words, you need more than just your verbal safe words. You need a physical safe word. And so whether that's through touch or squeezing or like a pinch with nails, whatever you want to do to incorporate that. And for instance, if you are playing with something, maybe you're in the dark. I have been in situations where you had like a light up ball that when it hits the ground, it lights up and there's something going off to illuminate the darkness. So sometimes safe words shouldn't be just reserved to just verbal, depending on what you're doing.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That's actually really interesting. All right, well, thank you so much for being here, Dana. Where can my listeners find you?
Yes, absolutely. So I also have a podcast that's The Partition at Partition, Home of Kinky Wellness. You can find me on all major streaming platforms. But at the end of this month, myself and seven other health influencers and sex educators and doctors are going to be hosting a Kinky Wellness Summit at the end of February to redefine your sex life in just one weekend and give you the sex education that no one talked to you about. So you can find that at kinkywellnesssummit.com. And yeah, just my Instagram, thepartition_life, if you want to hit me up over there.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here, Dana.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you to my guest for joining me in this week's episode. Be sure to check the episode description for all of their information. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to leave a comment and a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to help out the show. Send me your horrible hookups, your dating disasters, and your spicy questions to hookuphorrorstoriespodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to my YouTube channel for video versions of this show and a ton of other cool content. My blogs, The Deviant Diaries and A Deviant's Guide to Sex, can be found on my website at demetriawild.com. Support my work and get early access to my videos, podcast episodes, and exclusive content. Check out my Patreon, patreon.com/demetriawild. Also, follow me on Instagram. I am @demetriawild_. Oh yeah, and one last thing. Thank you for listening, and stay deviant.
Remember, subscribing might not be worth it, but it's also not optional. So just do it.